Morning. Today's daf of Baba Basra is Yutes. We're on the very top of the Amud on Yutes Amud Aleph. We're doing the heading of Lo Nivreches Hakovsim. The Mishnah taught us about safe distances that one has to keep certain items away from your neighbor, your neighbor's property line, and the wall, and the neighboring wall. So the Mishnah really can be broken up into two different categories. If you want to take a look back at the Mishnah and your Zayin Amud Aleph, and just as a quick review, the Mishnah says, Lo Yachbar Adam Bor B'Samach Leboro Shel Chaveiro. So if my friend has a pit, and I want to now dig, and his pit is right up against the property line, and I want to now dig, so I have to keep a distance, because obviously by me digging a hole, so I'm going to be compromising the earth that's between the two of us, so you have to make you have to recede. And the Mishnah goes on to say, Velo Siach, Velo Ma'ara, Velo Amas Amayim, Velo Nivreches Kofsim. So basically, all these different holes in the ground are going to be used for the purposes of holding water. And so I'm digging a hole in the ground, and I'm also adding water in all these different holes. So therefore, Aleim Kein Yerchek Mikosel Chaver Shosh Tfachim V'Sad V'Sid. So the Mishnah says that therefore I have to recede. And the conjunction I'm going to use right now is, and I also have to line it with Sid. Okay, now the Gemara is going to ask about the conjunction, whether I said the conjunction correctly, whether it should be an and or whether it should be an or. But in the meantime, however, that's the first half of the Mishnah. And then the second half of the Mishnah talks about different types of corrosive materials. Marchikin, Vesa Gephas, Vesa Zeva, Vesa Melech, Vesa Sid, Vesa Slime, etc., etc., etc. The Mishnah talks about those things which are corrosive and are therefore going to be harmful for the wall, and also you must recede as well. So basically, we're talking about two different types of damage. There is water damage of the Mishnah, and then there's acidic, corrosive heat damage. Those things which are going to hurt the wall. So we are focusing right now on the water damage. So we're talking now about not just a pit of water, but specifically used for laundering. Okay, before the advent of the washing machine, so you wanted to do laundry, so you go outside, and basically what they did back then is they filled a pit with water and wash away. So the Mishnah says that if you want to make your washing hole, so you got to put it three tefachim away from the property line. Amar of Nachman, Amar of Baravu, Lo Shanu Allah Min Mach Hamichamtan. Of Aminanajanda Amos. So the Gemara over here quotes Rav Nachman, and Rav Nachman says there's going to be a difference between the different types of washing pits there are. There are basically two types of washing pits. One he describes as a machamtsan, and the other one he describes as a najan. Rashi helps us understand. I read the Rashi. Min machamtsan, Rashi. Nevrechish shesharim bosa begadim yomim yomayim b'tzoras klavim. So this is basically soaking. Soaking. I'm soaking it in water, and I don't know if you'd want to try this at home, but you also add in a little bit of tzoras klavim. You add a little excrement of dog, and yeah, sure. And
I washed my hand when I tried.
Okay, okay, and that'll help remove all the dirt. Okay, and so this soaking process is done for a day or two. So that is the mechamtsan. The next one is the najan. Rashi nivrechi shekovsim umishavshem shimba. So the word najan, as you would have suspected, means to rub it, to really scrub it out. Umishavshem shimba mitoch shehamayim nitzin lemerchok tzarich la'archik dala ama. So here water is going to splash, and as a result of the splashing water, so therefore there needs to be even a further distance between this and the dividing wall. So now that we know the difference between our two washing pits, so now we go back to the Gemara. The Gemara makes a lot of sense. So let's go back to the point the Gemara made, is that when I'm using just a soaking pit, so I only need a distance of three tefachim in order to spare the either dividing wall or just simply the dividing line between me and my neighbor from water damage. However, if I'm najan, if we're going to be really scrubbing it and water's going to splatter, so then you have to be at a distance of four amas. Tayin ameachi, we're back in the Gemara. The Gemara's going to quote a brisa supporting exactly this point we just made. And that is, nevrechas akofsin dal amas. The brisa says four amas. V'anan tanan gimel tfachim. Yeah, our mishnah said three tfachim. El lav shemami nakid Rav Nachman. So the Gemara says, so once we know about the two different types of washing pits, so then therefore we're going to say it like Rav Nachman. Now we're going to do the same thing. We're just simply going to present it as a stira between the Mishnah and the Brisa. So the Mishnah says three tefachim. The Brisa says four amos. Amar Rav Nachman. Amar Rav Baravua. Lo kasha kamina mechamtan kamina najan. So the Gemara says good. So now we're going to be miyashiv the Mishnah against the Brisa by saying that there are two different types of water pits. Rav Chia Bered, Rav Avia Masin LeBehedja. Now Rav Chia Bered, Rav Avia had a Brisa, and in the Brisa it says it straight out. Ela imkein hirchik misfas mechamtan lekosu gematzvachim visad besed. So in his Brisa he had the word mechamtan actually used in the Brisa, meaning in our Mishnah it just simply said nivrechas hakovsim, just simply a hole for the washer. But in the Brisa it actually says mechamtan, so it's more specific. Adkan. Visad besit. Now again, we're talking about now digging a dish, digging a hole, and it has to be three tefachim. Now the next word in the Mishnah is visad besit, but the vav over here, it could be and or could be or. So ibayilahu visad besit tanan odilma osad besit tanan. So when the Mishnah is telling us that there has to be a distance of my pit, does that mean and you also need to line it in order to create a further reinforcement? Or does the Mishnah mean or? And or means either one. Either distance the three tefachim, or line, and you could put it right up against the property line. So the Gemara says, Osa b'sitanan, pshita, divisa b'sitanan. So the Gemara says, I think it's obvious that it's a vav as a conjunction and, not or. Why? Isa kedacha de osa b'sitanan. If you understood that the Mishnah was giving us the o, not the vav and, but the vav meaning o. Now it could very well be, by the way, that the vav by itself could indicate and or. Or the Mishnah could be grappling with the actual Nusach HaMishnah, meaning that the Mishnah, instead of having a Vav, should have the word O. Either way. So the Gemara says, if you want to say it's Osad B'Sitanan Imkein, Le'arvinu V'Lisninu. So the Gemara says, I'll tell you what. You look back at the Mishnah, and you look at the structure of the Mishnah, and the Mishnah could have put everything together. Meaning, go back to the beginning of the second paragraph of Bava Basra. Look, as I mentioned at the beginning of this year today, the Mishnah is really made up of two different types of damages. Water damage, heat damage. Now, when it says water damage, it talked about, what's the solution? Marchikin, I'm sorry. Ela imkein hirchik mikotzo chaver shosha tvachim visad besid. Now, let's assume it's a vav, right? Visad besid. Go down to the next part of the Mishnah, where it talks about all the things that are corrosive. So what do you have to do? So you have to be marchik in es ha gefes ves zeva ves amach ves asiv ves slime mikol shlosha chavero shlosha tfachim. Now I know in the Mishnah has the word oh, but you'll notice of course that's in parentheses. So really the girsa of the Mishnah should be visad besit. So basically what just happened in the Mishnah is the solution is going to be the same for both, seemingly. And so why the Mishnah just simply list off everything together and then end off with the words Marchikin Shlosha Tefachim V'Sad B'Sid? Why did the Mishnah break it up into two different sections? What the Gemara now is arguing and conjecturing is that it did so because it's not the same. Meaning in the Reisha it's Osad B'Sid, and in the Seifa it's V'Sad B'Sid. That's what the Gemara is arguing right now. So again, let's see this inside Pshita. The Mishnah could have and should have put everything together. If the wording of the Mishnah was visad besit, because then the ratio and the sefer would be the same. By virtue of the fact that it didn't put it together, it must be that it's not the same. And the ratio is o sad besit, it's an or, not an and. The Gemara says that argument is not a compelling argument. Dilma mishum delo dami hayezeka la hayezeka. The Gemara says the reason why it's separated has nothing to do with the different language, but just simply because it's categorically different. Reisha hezeka de mesuna sefer hezeka de havla. In the first half of the Mishnah, it's talking about water damage. In the second half of the Mishnah, it's talking about heat damage. There are two different types of damages. There are two different categories. And so the Mishnah is just simply keeping everything nice and organized. So Tashma. So the Gemara says, okay, you're right. I don't know at this point in time whether it's an and or an or. Rabbi Yehuda Amar Sela Hababi Adaim Zecho for Bar Mikan Vezecho for Bar Mikan Zemarchi Gimel Tvachim Vesad Besid. Vezemarchi Gimel Tvachim Vesad Besid. So this Brisa that we saw yesterday talked about where the kind of ground that separates me and my neighbor is really soft. It's like sand. And so what the Mishnah says that if I want to dig a hole on my side and he wants to dig a hole on his side, so I have to be marchikim otfachim, I have to distance myself three tfachim, and using the conjunction and I have to line it. Now, what the argument the Gemara is about to make is, yeah, you know why you need both? Because the ground is so soft, so therefore I need both. So, and the Gemara makes now what seems to be a very simple diuk. Taima de babi adaim. It's because the ground is so soft. Halo babi adaim lo. But if the ground is not soft, so I don't need to do both. And I only need to do one of the two. And that seems to be a very good diuk. The Gemara deflects this as well. Hu adin de afagav de lo babi adaim nami sad besid. No. Gemara says it could very well be that even if it's not soft ground, it could be I need to do both. I need to both distance and I need to fortify and reinforce the interior of the pit. Now, as far as why the Bryce is talking about a case where the ground is very soft, I need that. Why? Because I might have thought that because the ground is so soft, I had a havamina that should be even a greater distance. Kamash Malan, the Bryce is now giving us a chiddush that even though the ground is so soft, I could still get away with only a three tefach separation from the border, from the wall, either one, or reinforcement, but I don't need to go any more than three tefachim. The havamina is that I should have gone more than three tefachim. Next, marchikin as the gefes v'sezeva v'samelach v'seslime. Okay, I'm sorry. We're already on to the next part of the Mishnah. So the Gemara does not have a definitive conclusion in terms of whether it's either or it's both. The Rambam says you need both. You need both to distance and you need reinforcement.
You could make an observation. You see.
Right. Correct. It's a lot. This is svara. Right. Marchikin esha gefes v'sezeva v'samelach v'seslime. We're on to the next part of the Mishnah, and we're talking about taking things that are hot in nature, and you can't put it upright against the wall because the heat is going to be corrosive to the wall. So tanan hasam. So the Gemara here quotes a Mishnah in Shabbos. This is the fourth parak of Shabbos. Third parak of Shabbos has to do with cooking on Shabbos. Fourth parak of Shabbos also has to do with cooking, but more specifically insulation. One is not allowed to insulate on Shabbos, right? Before Shabbos, one can also not insulate food with a davar hamosif hevel. Any material that is going to generate heat, one is not allowed to use that to insulate food going into Shabbos. The reason why Rashi over here quotes is because if we do that, even though the item we're using is not coals, but the next step of the next time I do it, since last time I used something which generated heat, so the next time I do it, I'm going to use actual coals. Shema yatmin meremets. I may end up using coals, and if I may end up using coals, so then I'm going to stoke the coals and I'm going to create more of a fire. So the Chachamim banned insulation for food with anything that is mosif hevel even before Shabbos. That is the basic halacha on Shabbos itself. So you can't be matmin with davar hamosif and even davar sheinu mosif hevel on Shabbos. But before Shabbos, you cannot insulate with anything that's going to be mosif hevel. That is the beginning of the fourth parak of Masechta Shabbos. The Gemara quotes the Mishnah. Tanan hasa memet tomnin uvama ein tomnin. So, right, it sounds very familiar, right? By Memalikin of Amayin Malikin, right? But that's the second parak of Shabbos. So we're right. This is the fourth parak. Anyway, so by Metomim Amayin Tomnim Ain Tomnim Lo Begefes Lo Bezeva Lo Bemelach Lo Besin Lo Bechol Ben Lachim Ben Yevashim. So the Mishnah gives us a list of materials that generate heat, and they are olives, manure, salt, limestone, sand. And it doesn't matter whether the material is wet or dry. Now, Mishna Hakadiktani. So here, basically, we have two Mishnayos in Shas. One in the fourth parak of Shabbos. One here in the second parak of Baba Basra. Obviously, dealing with two different issues. But we're looking for, basically, the common denominator, list of materials that generate heat. in Baba Basra, I need to know that because I can't take these materials and put it up right up against our neighboring wall. It's going to harm the wall. In Shabbos, there's a Gzera Derabbanan that I'm not allowed to use them. And so basically what the Gemara now is going to do is compare the list here in Baba Basra and this list in Shabbos. And notably, there is one item mentioned extra in Baba Basra, not mentioned in Shabbos, and there's one item in Shabbos not mentioned in Baba Basra. And so the Gemara now is going to make the observation. So here in Baba Basra, I mentioned salim. Now we're going to translate salim as like a flintstone, right? A stone that is combustible and generates heat. The Mishnah in Shabbos does not mention it, and mention sand. And Mishnah Hasim Dikani Chov Lakani Salim. And conversely, the Mishnah in Shabbos mentions sand, and our Mishnah here in Baba Basra does not mention sand. So in the list, it's almost a perfect match. But salim and chol, Baba Basra has salim, Shabbos doesn't. Shabbos has chol, Baba Basra doesn't. Amar of Yosef. So how are we going to deal with that? The Gemara is going to give a number of suggestions of how to deal with that. One says the Gemara Amar of Yosef l'fishein darkan shemani adam lahatmin b'salim. So Rav Yosef says it's a practical issue. People do not use flintstone in order to insulate their food going into Shabbos. So Amalei Abaye, so Abaye says to Rav Yosef, okay, I know it's not normally done, but sometimes that's not what is going to be the threshold of what makes the list and what does not make the list. Do people insulate with using tufts of wool or dyed wool? So Ditanya in the Mishnah and the Braisa says, the Mishnah says that one is not allowed to use tufts of wool and dyed wool and tufts of maybe cotton. However, it is muksa, so you're not allowed to move it. And the Gemara in Shabbos, if I remember correctly, deals with the obvious issue. Well, if you insulate with an item that's muksa, so how do you end up getting your pot outside? Okay, so the Gemara over there discusses it. But in the meantime, the Abaye's point to Rav Yosef is right now very simple. People don't do it, and yet the Braisa records, you know, it talks about things that are not that are not normally used. So practicality is not necessarily going to be the guideline of what the Mishnah or Braisa discusses or what it does not discuss. So if that's true, so then we're back to our question. So then why wouldn't the Mishnah also include Salim flintstone? Elamar Abaye Yagid Alavreo. So Abaye says, so I'll give you my solution, and that is that you'll know both Mishnayos. And the two Mishnayos are meant to complement one another. So we have a Mishnah Shabbos, we have a Mishnah Baba Basra. So, and you know, we need to know both. We need to know Kol HaTorah Kula. We need to know all of Shas. Okay, so it's slightly easier said than done, but we need to know it, and so once we know the Mishnah Shabbos, and once we know the Mishnah Baba Basra, so they complement one another. The pasuk in Eov says, "Yagid alav re'o," its neighbor will talk about the other. So once I know about one, so it's meant to complement the other. Tana hachas salim v'huadin l'chol, tana hasim chol v'huadin slaim. So fine. So our Mishnah doesn't mention chol, but you know the Mishnah Shabbos, so you'll add chol to the list. The Mishnah Shabbos doesn't mention salim, okay, but I know the Mishnah Baba Basra, so you just simply add it to the list. So Amalei Rava Iyagid alav re'o listening to l'kula b'chadav listening chadav minay be'idach. So Rava says to Abaye, I don't agree with you. Meaning, I agree with the basic idea, but let's talk about the format. If the whole idea is that the Mishnayos are meant to complement one another, why doesn't the Mishnah give an exhaustive list one of the two places, and the other place just simply mention one of the materials, and then you'll know, oh yeah, anything which generates heat. Oh, okay, I have the other Mishnah. The other Mishnah gave me the exhaustive list, and so therefore I'll just have the two Mishnahs complement one another. Rava says, if that's really what the Mishnah was getting at, that should have been the format of the two Mishnayos. That's not what happened. The Mishnah in Shabbos mentions everything but one. The Mishnah Baba Basra mentions everything but another one. So Rava says, I don't think that's really what's going on over here. So, right, v'hu adin le'idach, right, the, right, whatever, that's just a girsa issue. Okay, so Ela Amar Rava Hasam Hainu Taima Delo Katani Salayim. So Rava says, I'll give you what my think is the reason why the Mishnah Shabbos does not mention flintstone, which is Mishum De Mishtakech Mishtakchei La Lekadera. So he says, I think the reason why is because it's Mishtakech the pot. What does that mean? Rashi himself here's one pshat, and also here's another pshat. Rashi says, number one, the flintstone's going to break the pot. Okay, you take a look at Rashi. So I hear that basically it's going to break the pot. So in other words, the Mishnah Shabbos is not going to mention the Salayim, because not only is it not used, but worse than that, it's actually detrimental. If you try to insulate your pot using this kind of flintstone, so it's basically, it's going to create a combustion in which it's going to break the pot. Uvachomakom Rashi points out that generally speaking, Shamati Shema Lechaluda, it rusts out the pot. Okay, that's another pshat Rashi says I heard, but over here he thinks that it actually is going to break the pot. Okay, so that's Rava's answer, but that's only answering half the question. What about the fact that our Mishnah doesn't mention chol? And Rava says, and I'll tell you over here why it doesn't mention sand, because sand has an interesting property. If you take something hot and put in sand, so sand is going to keep it hot. But if you have something cold up against sand, it's not going to get hot, but just the opposite, is actually going to cool it down. So, says Rava, the reason why in Shabbos it mentions sand is because sand will actually keep the pot hot. Because you're putting a hot pot in the sand, so the sand is now going to get hot, and it's going to keep the pot hot. Mashenkin over here, if you just have sand by a cold wall, it will not heat up the wall. In fact, just the opposite. It'll keep it cool. So, v'hatani Rabbi Yoshia chol has... I'm sorry. Fine. What we have right now, the question, how come our Mishnah doesn't mention chol? How come the Mishnah in Shabbos does not mention Salayim? So we have so far now three different suggestions of the Amoraim. Rav Yosef, Abaye, and Rava. The Gemara now continues in this discussion. Now, Rabbi Yoshia had a brisa, and in his brisa, it actually mentioned sand, meaning the brisa regarding Hezek. It actually mentioned sand. So, the Gemara says, no, it doesn't. Yeah, the brisa over there is talking about sand, but it's talking about waterlogged sand. So really what we're describing over there is water damage, not heat damage. So Tana Didan, Nami Lisniv Lukman Mimasuna. So the Gemara says, okay, but you know our Mishnah actually also mentions water damage as well. So why didn't the Mishnah include sand? Okay, fine, you don't want to put it in the category of heat damage, but put it in the first part of the Mishnah, which has to do with water damage. So the Gemara says, Atan Le Amasamayim. So the Gemara says, yeah, but the Mishnah talks about water damage. She talks about the canal. So, Atami lo ketani, amas amayim v'ketani nevreches akovsim. The Mishnah gives us a list. So it's not like the Mishnah just gave one example. The Mishnah is giving a list. As long as the Mishnah is giving a list, so include in that also waterlogged sand. So the Gemara says, Hanu tzricha. No, the Gemara says, the Mishnah needed to mention these specific two examples. The launderer's pit and the canal. Why? Because when it comes to the canal, there's always water in the canal. By the launderer's pit, sometimes there's water, sometimes there's not. So that's why the launderer's pit is a chiddush. And the Gemara says, and you can also argue in the other direction. In the launderer's pit, the water is there and it's stationary, meaning the water just stays there. Mashenkin, in the canal, the water is running, and you can make the argument that with the running water, it's not as corrosive to the wall as stationary water. So that's the why I need both to tell me about the chiddush of the launderer's pit and the chiddush of the canal. But the Mishnah after that point in time does not have to get exhaustive about any more examples. We could figure out all the other examples based on these two. Okay. We are now talking about where you can't plant seeds right up against the wall because that's going to be damaging to the wall, and you can't plow right up against the wall because that's going to be damaging to the wall. The Gemara's questions over here are very technical questions. We are towards the bottom of Yitzes Amad Aleph. If you're going to be planting, you know what that means. By definition, you're going to be plowing. So why would the Mishnah have to give a separate example of don't plant because it's going to hurt the wall? Yeah, if you're planting, you're plowing, right? Gemara's answer is not necessarily by Mapolis Yad. No, it could very well be that you're just simply throwing the seeds down on the ground and you're not doing any type of real plowing. So the Gemara says, Machareisha v'tepok le'mishim Mizraim. If we've established that putting seeds is going to harm the wall, so then, by definition, if you're seeding, aren't you going to be plowing as well? Sorry. If you're plowing, aren't you going to be seeding? So the Gemara says, Bechorish Leilan. It's not necessarily. Rashi points out over here, you've had a tree here for a very long time, and sometimes just for the improvement of the tree, you're going to be digging around the tree, perhaps making more, right, more room for water to come in. Whatever the explanation is, you know, I'm not a farmer, I'm not a gardener. So the, but whatever. In other words, but it's possible that you can plow without planting a seed. So the Gemara says, V'tepek le mishamaya. So the Gemara says, now, if there are seeds over there and you're plowing over there, aren't you also watering? And haven't we already described water damage? So the Gemara says, again, not necessarily. So the Gemara says, no. In Eretz Yisrael, they don't have to irrigate their field. They get the rainwater. The rainwater will be, under certain circumstances, sufficient. And rainwater, obviously, is not corrosive. And if it is, there's nothing you could do about it. Right? It's natural. So anyway, so it's possible that you will be plowing without planting, planting without plowing, and it's also possible that both will happen without extra water to irrigate. Okay, now, limemra. So let's now go back to the planting. I'm planting seeds, and the Mishnah says you can't do that right up against the wall. It's going to be harmful to the wall. Question, why? Is it the pshat that the seeds are going to be growing horizontally? Now, the answer, of course, is no. The seeds go vertically, right? The roots generally go down. The plant usually goes up. And what exactly is the issue? So the Gemara is quite, that's the Gemara's question. Lamemra dezraim litzedadim tam mishtarshei. Do you mean to tell me that seeds go horizontally? They go off to the sides. The Gemara says it's not true. Now, to make the point that it's not true, the Gemara is going to quote a Mishnah. The Mishnah is in the seventh perek of Kalayim. V'atanan hamavir chazegevim ba'aretzim ein al gaba afashosh tefachim lo yavizer ala. So, if you were to take a vine and take one of the one of the shoots of the vine and stick it back into the ground in order to basically replant it, this is what's called mavrich. So there's an English word for it. You'll forgive me, I don't know what it is, but basically you're taking a shoot, putting it back into the ground. So im ein al gaba afer shosh tefachim, if it's not submerged three tefachim into the ground, so you cannot plant another seed directly over it. Why? So the answer is kalayim, because now you're putting the vine and another seed together. However, the Braisa teaches us utmi Allah aval zareya satsta dem elach velach. You can't put another seed directly over the vine, but what you're allowed to do is you're allowed to plant another seed to the side and another seed to the side. Meaning the only assumption is that it'll go up, but it won't go to the side. So therefore, you can plant another seed to the side. So the whole point, according to this Mishnah, climb together with the Braisa, is just to reinforce this idea that seeds only go up, not to the side. So what's wrong with planting seeds right up against the wall? You're not planting it underneath the wall, you're planting it to the side of the wall. Shouldn't it be fine? So I'm a Rabbi Chaga b'shem Rabbi Yosi mimeshe machlidim esakarka umalin alfertichoch. So the Gemara says, in terms of the actual plant itself, the plant goes directly up. However, what happens to the surrounding earth is that the surrounding earth softens up. Rashi writes, Eitzal kosel bim kamam amalin afer tichuach umitz motit karka yisora kotel etzdadim. And basically what's going to happen is it's going to compromise the foundation of the wall, as the earth now that surrounds the planting is going to get very soft. So that's why you have to take the seeds and put them at a distance of three tefachim. Okay. Ve'esmei raglayim in a kosel gim tefachim. Urine is acidic. Urine has a corrosive nature to it. You cannot urinate right up against the wall. You have to distance yourself three tefachim. Am Rava Bar Barchana Mutar La'adam La'ashem Mayim B'tzad Kosel Shel Chavera. So Rava Barchana says you can urinate right up against your friend's wall. In other words, and presumably he feels that there's no problem, even though the Mishnah taught us that there would be a problem, and that obviously presents an issue. He's an Amora, the Mishnah's a Tana. We're going to deal with that in just a moment. But how does he know that you're allowed to urinate? It's based on a pasuk in Malachim. Dechsiv, the Navi says to Achav, V'ichrati la'achav, Mashim Bekir, V'atzur V'azuv B'Yisrael. So the Navi tells Achav that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to destroy you. He's going to destroy all the males. Look at how the Navi describes a male. Mashim Bekir. Here. It's not a very flattering and complimentary way to describe the men. Okay, fine. So, but Mashin Bekir, so we urinate on walls, and Vatzur Vazuv B'Yisrael. And anything that is collected in the mass is also going to be destroyed as well. Okay, Achav did not. Achav was not the best of kings, and I'm saying that with just a hint of subtlety. And so the Navi tells him that he and his whole family is going to be destroyed. But anyway, for our purposes over here, just the way the men are described as being Mashim Bekir would give the indication that it's okay. Meaning that's how we're described. So the Gemara says, "V'anan tanan ve'esmei reglaim in a kosel shoshot tvachim." So, but the Mishnah says that you cannot introduce urine within three tvachim of walls; it's going to harm the wall. So we have what is a stira between. It's kind of funny, but the Mishnah and a pasuk of Malachim. The Mishnah says that there has to be distance. The pasuk of Malachim says that people do it. So the Gemara says, "Hasam bishovchim." So the Gemara says, "Well, we'll make the following distinction. So for a man to urinate on the wall, so he's not introducing a lot of urine into the wall. So for that, that's not a problem. Hey, if you have, however, a collection of urine, right? They had bowls back then, and a bunch of people used to urinate into it. And so now to deposit a whole collected bowl of urine right up against the wall, that's going to be an issue. Okay, now we'll skip the parentheses. The parentheses basically just repeats what we just learned together. Tashma. Lo yashin adam mayim b'tzad koso shel chavero elam kein yirchik mimenu gimel tvachim. So we have now a brisa, and the brisa clearly is talking about urination. A man urinating. And the Mishnah says that one is not allowed to urinate by a wall of his friend unless he distances himself to tefachim. Now that's talking about if the wall is made up of bricks. So the bricks are obviously composite. They're softer, and when you urinate on them, they're going to fall apart. However, if the wall is made up of stone, so then the distance doesn't have to be three tefachim; it could be even a shorter distance, as long as you don't damage the wall. Okay, what would give us a shear? The Gemara is going to want to quantify the kama tefach v'tefach tefach. So you just have to be one tefach away from the wall if the wall is made up of stone. V'sheltsum nama. Now, if the wall is built on bedrock, so we're talking about a super solid foundation. So then you can urinate directly on the wall. But what comes out, however, is that under certain circumstances, even if it's just urination, and we're not talking about a bowl of urine, we're talking about just a man urinating, so the brisa is clearly saying that you're not allowed to do it and you have to distance yourself. Again, the brisa also says that under certain circumstances, okay, but the brisa starts off by saying that there has to be distance to yufta de rabba barchana to yufta. Okay, so the Gemara points out that fine, so we don't have a support for Rabba Bar Chana. So the Gemara says, Rabba Bar Chana kra kamar. Yeah, but he quoted a pasuk in Navi. That's very strong. So the Gemara says, Hasam achi kamar. Afilu midei dedarke lishuna bekir lo shavikna lei umay niu kalba. So the Gemara says, we're going to have to just give a new pshat in the pasuk in Malachim. When the Navi told Achav, I'm going to destroy all of you, even the Mashim Bekir, what was he talking about? Not a human. A human doesn't urinate on a wall, as we've just concluded. But rather, it's talking about those things which generally urinate on a wall, and that is a kelev, a dog. And the Navi's telling Achav, everything you own is going to be destroyed, even the dogs. Amar Rav Tuvi Bar Kisna Amar Shmuel. Okay. The Gemara now is going to take us on a tangent. And so, as we are about to start this tangent, so let me just give a brief introduction, and then we can continue in the Gemara. Okay, so we know that when you have human remains, tumas mace, so the tumah spreads out over the entirety of the roof. So Rachman Latzon, if we had a human remains in this room, kizayis min mace. If we have kizayis min mace in this room, so the way the tumah is going to operate and behave is that the tumah is going to go up from the mace, hit the roof, spread out over the entirety of the roof, drop back down again, and so anybody who's going to be under the roof is going to be now a avatuma, meaning the mace itself, the human remains itself, is an avi avatuma. See, literally the granddaddy of tuma. It's the source of tuma. And so therefore, anyone now who's going to be under the same roof is going to be subject to have the transmission of tuma's mace, and therefore you're going to be now tuma mace, and you're going to be an avatuma. Okay, what if you have two buildings that are one right next to another? So if there is a solid wall separating the two buildings, so the tumah does not spread from one room to the next room, from one building to the next building, being that the wall is going to be separating. So in other words, if the mace is in this room, so well, we have doors over here, so we're not going to be talking about doors today. We're just going to be talking about window openings. So if I have a solid wall separating the two rooms, so then the tumor does not transmit from one room to the next room. If, however, I have a chalon, I have a window, so then under certain circumstances, the tumor now is going to go through the window and then basically go over the entirety of the roof of the next room over. And how big a window do we need? So this is what we're discussing over the course of the remainder of today's daf. What does this have anything to do with what we're discussing right now? So the connection is only going to be learned to tomorrow. So wait till tomorrow, and tomorrow we'll see why it is that this sugya over here is being introduced right here, right now, in the second parak of Baba Basra. How big does a window need to be in order for the tumah to transmit from one room to another room? So for our purposes right now, we are going to say a tefach. It's not always a tefach. Under certain circumstances, it really depends on the purpose of the window. If the window is there for sunlight, if the window is there for air, the Mishnayos describe different types of windows. The window we are going to be discussing under our discussion is where the window is used as a means of passing from one room to the next. So in order for the window to be a significant window, it has to be one tefach by one tefach, in order for tumah to transmit from one room to another room. What if now I place something in this window to minimize its area? So that's what's called a niyut. That is now I'm minimizing the shear. And as long as what I'm putting there is going to stand there for, I'm going to leave there for an indefinite amount of time. So therefore now I've minimized it, and that will now stop the tumah from going from one room to another room. Okay, and just as long as we're still in this introduction, the only way that by placing something in that window area is going to block the tumah is that the item that I put in there itself is not mekabel tumah. If the item that I place in there is mekabel tumah, so then it's einu chotzetz bifnei tumah, does not stop tumah going from one area, from one room to another room. Okay. With all that stated, let's begin. Amar Rav Tuvia Bar Kista, Amar Shmuel. So the Gemara quotes, in the name of Shmuel, Rakik, a small wafer that is placed in the window, which now is going to minimize the size of the window. The window is exactly one tefach by one tefach, and I place a little wafer over there. So it's not going to minimize the window, which means that the tumah is still going to be communicating from one room to the next room. Einu mamayit b'chalom, my ear yirakik afilu avanamis. The Gemara says, well, what do you mean a rakik? What do you mean a cracker? Even if it's bigger than a cracker. So the Gemara says, lomi b'aykamer. No, what Shmuel meant is, I'll tell you chiddush, I'll tell you even a second chiddush. Lomi, even a bigger chiddush. Lomi b'ayava kevdechzelei, ichzei lomevatalei. Look, if I put like a muffin, or something larger than just a thin wafer. So just by putting it down on the small windowsill separating the two rooms, so you know you don't plan on leaving it there for a while. Someone's going to want to take it. Someone's going to want to eat it. And so therefore, it's for sure not going to be mamayit. For sure not, will not minimize from the dimensions of the window. However, a cracker, it's thin. I put it down. It's no one's going to really want to pick it up. No one's really going to want to eat it. Avarikik the mum is. It becomes disgusting. Ema betule mevatole. So I might have thought that by placing it over there, it's going to become batal. And so therefore, and if it becomes batal in this case, that means it's going to reduce the size of the window and therefore create blockage between the two rooms. That's what I would have thought. Kamash Milan. So it's a bigger chiddush to even talk about a wafer. Now, v'tepikle da'avle davishu mekabel tumah v'chol davishu mekabel tumah eino chotzes bifnei tumah. We're talking about a cracker. Cracker is a food. A food is mekabel tumah. And in, as we pointed out in our short introduction, something which is mekabel tumah is eino chotzes bifnei tumah. It doesn't block the tumah. So over here, if we're talking about a wafer, it's big, small, it doesn't matter. It's not going to block the tumah. So the Gemara says, shenilos b'mei peros. So the Gemara says that the wafer was kneaded with fruit juice, and it was not water that was used in order to make the wafer. And so what? And so what? We know that in order for a food to become mekabel tumah, susceptible to tumah, it has to first be mukhshir lekabel tumah. It has to be prepared in order to be mekabel tumah. How do you do hechshir? How do you prepare? It has to come into contact with one of the seven liquids. Yad shafach dam. Right, the mnemonic to help us remember the seven liquids. Rashi, interestingly enough, Rashi over here only mentions three of the seven. I don't know why, but right, Rashi says kigon mayin yayin v'chalav, right, water, wine, and milk, right. There are four more out there. honey, oil, and blood. So the so the fruit juice is not one of the seven liquids. So when I make something with fruit juice, so in obviously now it's the food, and the fruit juice obviously it's the food itself, but because it did not come into contact with one of the seven liquids, it's not mukshal kapal tumah, it's not susceptible to tumah, and that's why now no longer consideration, and now the only consideration is, do I plan on leaving it there for some time? And if I don't plan on leaving it there for some time, it's not going to be a memayit and will not minimize the size of the window.
Well, the Rashi doesn't mention one because it says he was kneaded with fruit juice, so he's mentioning the three things that possibly could have.
Good, very good. I thought the same thing also. I also had that thought. That's very good. Meitzvei kupa malaya tevin vechavis malaya grogris hamunachim bechalon. So if I have a basket filled with grain, or if I have a barrel filled with figs, and it's placed in the window. So if I can remove the basket or the barrel and the grain and the figs would be there, so then it provides a chatzitza, will serve as a barrier. Otherwise it will not be a barrier. So the Gemara says, now again, I don't understand. Now, as far as the grain is concerned, the tevin, so aren't you going to use that for your animal? And so you really don't plan on leaving it there. And Syria, chazav latina. Basiria. So the Gemara says that we're talking about where it is already rotted, so I'm not going to be giving it to my animal. So the Gemara says, Chazilatina, yeah, but can I make a mortar out of it? So the Gemara says, Deitzbekutsi. The Gemara says, no, it's got thorns in it, and you can't use it even for mortar. Chazilasaka, the Gemara says, yeah, but can't I use it in order for fuel for the fires? The Gemara says, Bimasuna, where it is wet. So I can't make a fire out of it. So the Gemara says Chazi lahesegadol. So the Gemara says, yeah, but I can make it for a big fire. Okay, this I have experience with. You make a little campfire, even at this age, I'm still making campfires in the summertime. So anyway, so once you have a good fire going, so then you can throw whatever you want into the fire, and then you're good to go. So over here, so basically, look, so it's thorny and it's wet and I can't feed it to my animal and I can't start a fire with it, but once I have a fire going, it has utility, it has usage, so why is it going to be mamai? Why will it diminish the size of the window? So the Gemara says, Chazal hasagadol, hasagadol lo shchiach. So the Gemara says, it's just not that shchiach, it's not that common. So that's why it's not going to be used. So basically, after going through a number of okimtas, so the Gemara says that under certain circumstances, the tevin can actually serve as a way of minimizing the whole of the window to block the tumas meis going from one room to another. Grogerus, now we're talking about the figs. Hachazilei, so the Gemara says, yeah, people eat them. And so if people eat them, obviously, how could they serve as a way of minimizing? So Amar Shmuel, Bishe, Hitrifu. So the Gemara says that they're infested with worms. So the Gemara quotes also in the name of Rabba that they were infested with worms. So therefore they're not edible, and that's why they're going to be minimizing the size of the window. Okay, we'll stop over here. We'll pick it up tomorrow, continuing this discussion. And tomorrow I'll explain to you how this all came part of our discussion over here of the second parak of Baba Basra. Just quickly to recap. We continued the discussion today of the Mishnah. Mishnah talked about things which cause water damage, things which cause heat damage, have to be placed at a safe distance from the neighboring wall by 3 tefachim. Okay, so a number of details that we discussed over the course of today. Questions of, do I need distance and insulation, or is one of the two going to be sufficient? Questions of comparing our Mishnah here in Baba Basra to the Mishnah in Shabbos. Mishnah in Baba Basra gives us a list of things which produce heat. Mishnah in Shabbos also in the fourth paragraph is doing the same thing. Mishnah over there mentions chol. Over here our Mishnah doesn't. Our Mishnah over here mentions salim, flintstone. The Mishnah in Shabbos doesn't. Why not? The Gemara gave a number of different approaches in terms of how to understand that. Seeds go down and up, not horizontally. Why is seeds an issue? The Gemara explains that it softens the ground. The Gemara then talked about urine. Rabbi Barachana says that urinating on a wall is fine based on the pasuk. The Gemara says that we don't have a support for that. The Brisa says that you're not allowed to urinate on the neighbor's wall. It's going to be corrosive. It's going to be harmful. We have to re-explain the pasuk. We did that as well. And then we went off on a tangent this the end of this morning, talking about the window, a chalon, separating two rooms. Tumas Mesa is going to go through the two, as long as the window is a tefach by tefach. If, however, I have something which minimizes the hole, so then it's going to block the tumah for going through. And wafers and foods are going to not block the tumah. The Gemara discussed many issues regarding the nature of this blockage, and we're going to continue the discussion tomorrow. And tomorrow, then we resume back to issues of Baba Basra.